may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga on January the 26th. And I'll bet you a month ago, if you said the month of January will come like it was three days, you would have said, you're nuts. But here it is, the end of January already. And only about 11 months to Christmas. And that's pretty sick to think of because that'll come fast too. The weather outside is chilly, and so dress up if you're going out. And Sue, our guest Sue Beebe this morning, who's the assistant director and agricultural leader of Saratoga County Cooperative Extension and is our quarterly guest on Talk Saratoga. Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, I heard, of course, it's kind of early yet because I think meteorologist is the only job that one can have and be wrong half the time and still demand big pay. But we're supposed to have a 5 to 8 inch snow fall on Wednesday.
That's what they're thinking right now.
That's what they're thinking. Now, we did so nice in December and January, but you know, once it seems like it snows, it picks a day like Tuesday or Wednesday, and every week we get a storm on that day.
As long as they go with Tuesday or Wednesday, I'm great, because Master Gardener training has begun, and those are on Mondays, so I need my Mondays clear.
So you need your Mondays clear. Well, I'll tell you, the you know, you don't mind the snow, because around here normally, maybe not so much in Saratoga, but in the surrounding areas, they plow. You can get out, I mean, not even during the snowstorm, because they plow so well. I know some people complain that around Saratoga it's difficult, but
Some of the city streets are a little narrow right now.
Yeah, they are. You know? And
it's tough when you have all that amount of snow followed by the rain, because right. That's what really kills you, is getting that icing on it.
Oh, that was terrible.
You know, and then it's just really, really tough.
Thursday was terrible. And that, you know, that's one of the things on the list that I wanted to talk to you about. Is there anything we talked about in the fall about how to protect your shrubs and flowering bushes and different things. And if people didn't do that, if they didn't take our advice, more your advice than mine, but is there anything they can do now? Because that ice storm had to have been damaging to a lot of trees, bushes.
You know, well, the big thing at this point is, you know, where is it going to go from here? So, sure, if you've got, you know, things that are now uncovered, things that have melted away from any of the snow, you know, from the heavy snows off of the plant material, you can still do various things. You have arborvitae that's close to a road that you're concerned about. You could still do, you know, some wrapping. You can't do the same kind of, you know, fencing that you might have done in the fall when you could get into the ground with stakes and do things.
Sure.
But you could do some, you know, light wrapping around the plant material itself to help protect it, you know, from salt damages, because when you've got the ice, you definitely are going to have a lot more salts being utilized,
right?
You know, and so that's where you start to get a lot of that spray coming up and a lot of effects onto things, you know. And still, you know, even though you have snow out there, you could still put over, you've got, you know, some shrubs under the eaves. You can anchor those into the snow that's there,
right?
You know, and still be able to put some of those out if you really needed to have protection. If you have anything that is left exposed at this point in time, You know, you can definitely be, you know, mulching over it with some, you know, pine boughs or something along that line, because if you go around, you can still find a few places where you definitely could pick up some that they haven't scrapped totally yet from the holiday season.
Sure.
You know, so there are some things that you can do. But, you know, once the snow cover's there, the snow's a great insulator.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I mean, you do have the potential of chilling damage later, but the chilling damage to the buds is really more of a problem when we hit the month of March than it is
okay
now.
Yeah, because so, they're starting to come out then.
You know, everything starts to swell, and once the swelling begins into them, then it makes it a little bit tougher. But right now, they really aren't. You don't have that same kind of swelling mechanism going on,
right.
So you're not going to see as much damage being done as you are, you know, as we get a little closer to springtime.
See, I know I have to wear my hat into March or April because my head starts to swell. So I got to keep that, you know, from my hair from budding.
I see.
Even the hair that I'm losing, you know. But yeah, because I just wondered about people that have left, you know, bushes exposed. And when you get a 18-inch snowstorm followed by rain and ice, I mean, that's a lot of weight on bushes. And I know, you know, you get some of them that'll snap, some of them that'll bend over. And I know that you've always told me that the ones that bend should come back up in the spring or when the weather gets warmer.
They will.
Yeah. So, but I know, like at one point, we've been good since we've covered the last couple of years, but our rhododendrons always used to snap.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
their branches are yeah. not that big. You
no,
know?
No, and the way that they're spread out, they have a funny lay to them, which makes it a lot harder for them to really hold the weight.
Right, they're not
compact.
Know?
They don't have not at all, not at all. So it makes a real big difference into what it is. But the other thing people really need to be mindful of is that when you do have all of that weight, you know, for instance, I have used in front of my house, they were there when I moved in, and I've been there now for, you know, like 28 years. So, and sadly, they've grown from these really small ewes to these really huge ewes now. But the ones that are in the center, you know, are more trimmed, so they're more flat. So, of course, they really hold the snow.
Right.
So when you get that kind of a weight, you know, there are times that realistically, I mean, the plants can support it to a certain extent.
Right.
But you add that icing on top of it, and that's when it really starts to be a problem. So, you know, gently lifting off some of that so that you have less weight onto it. But the big thing is you don't really want to be going in and, you know, shoveling it off and nicking into the wood. You know, it's really going to be that more gentle lifting of it to try to remove what you can.
Right.
You know, if you have early light snow onto things, you know, the best thing to do would be like to bring out a blower and blow the snow off of it so that you're not affecting the plant tissue in any way.
Right.
You know, but if you leaving it on, you are going to get more compression. And if we get another laid of, 8 inches on top of what you now have, which, you know, is what, you know, by the time it melted down, you're probably looking at least 6 to 8 inches sitting there with an ice crust on top of it, put eight
right.
more inches on top of that, you know, all of a sudden you're going to have a pancake out of that shrub. Now,
right.
now if it, as long as nothing breaks, it will bounce back, but it's
sure.
going to take time to bounce back.
Well, the thing is, if I did that, my thing would be to go out and clean some of that snow off gently. I mean,
that's exactly
very gently.
Be very gentle, get
out.
It off.
Now, I use my leaf blower to clean the porch, to blow the snow off from the porch. I mean, there's not that much, and I hate using a shovel on because we have that composite, you know.
Okay.
So I use that anyway, I told you about the shrub covers that I have. The only problem is that they're anchored near the, we got like blocks up, maybe four. So they're anchored against the block. So after I snow blow the sidewalk, get it just so, the snow falls off of the shrub covers in there. I got to do it again. So it's like, you can't win, but.
Well, yes. I totally understand.
Yeah, but that's okay.
No.
I mean, I'd rather have the shrubs covered and do that than just to have them lay on. Because
yeah.
One of the things that that we didn't talk about the last time that almost everybody does, but I think things can get away from people, is to keep your gutters clean.
Yeah.
Because if they're full of leaves, then you have no protection of anything, even if we get rain and then it freezes up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that there's a lot of problems, because I know now we got extremely warm weather after that snowfall. I mean, 40 degrees, which for us up here is
yeah.
pretty warm in January. I mean, even during a January thaw. And the roads were covered with, I mean, lakes. And because I don't think the city goes opens up the drain. What are they? The sewer drains. Mm-hmm. And the water had no place to go. Now, my next door neighbor has a problem with the water going into his basement. And, I mean, he had a sub pump pushing
sure.
it back out into the snow.
Yep.
And we've never had a problem, but the last couple of years, and we never knew this, the water comes up from below.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And our cellar floor is damp, not puddles or anything,
mm-hmm.
but and we've never had a problem with water coming through, you know. And I went down last night, I said to my wife, because my daughter came over, so I watched TV downstairs. I said, my feet are soaking wet. So she goes, well, it's probably coming up through the floor.
That's exactly
like it,
right.
You know, the concrete like it did last year. So
yep.
people have to be aware of that, too, in weather like this that may not have a problem generally with their basement floor.
That is correct.
Be on the lookout for that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so much happens within areas. You know, once you get more and more construction going around places, you get more earth moved, you get more changes, and, you know, you can have, you know, something that's occurring, you know, 5, you know, miles away from you that can affect what's happening in your neighborhood today, and you don't think of that.
Right.
You know, and that becomes really an issue for folks. And, you know, I mean, and the same thing happens when you're out more in that, you know, in the, you know, out further in the country setting where you're not on, you know, city water systems, and people all of a sudden their water changes and they're like, you know, for years my water's been fine, and then it's like, well, you know, 6 miles down the road, you've got 3 new houses. That now has impacted what your flow is, and yes, your water is different.
Sure.
Because the whole flow in that area is very different.
And you look at where we are, they have started that big project next to the post office. And we're only a mile and a half away.
Yeah, what is that big project next to
they,
the post office?
They are having probably, I forgot how many units, maybe 800 supposedly
okay.
affordable housing units to start.
I just assumed that's probably what it was,
yeah,
but I didn't really know.
I think they started at $1,200, which kind of they think is affordable housing. But anyway, and then across the street on Grant, which is right across from us, they're building 5 houses on a lot that's probably big enough, not even quarter acre size lots.
Yeah.
So that, you're
yeah.
right, that
and
can
it does.
Affect
it
everything.
It really affects the way water flows in an area, and it really makes a very, very big difference as to what happens. So, you know, yeah, and people will sit there and they'll say, you know, they'll be like, you know, but I've been in this house for 40 years and I've never had this issue.
Yep.
Well, 40 years ago, look at what the neighborhood has changed
right.
and how things have moved around you. And you really do need to look in a 5-mile radius of your home as to what's happening. And when people think about something, you know, affecting things, they always are thinking something that's occurring right next door. But no, we don't need to be next door.
And, you know, the thing about Saratoga, too, is that it used to be a lake. We used to be underwater. And that's why we have so many springs, natural springs. And when I dug a point years ago to use the water for gardening,
mm-hmm.
you know, for I only had to go down about 15 feet. So
yep.
when you got all this water coming, melting like we do, a rapid melt, not a nice, easy melt like
right.
you normally do over winter, you got a lot of water pushing up. And it's something. But one of the other things that leads to to building, of course, is the tearing down of natural habitat for animals. And I mean, you would know a lot about this, but we're in the city, I mean, outside on the outskirts of the city. And the other, well, about a month ago, I guess it was before Christmas, I look out my front window and I see two deer walking up the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. They look dazed and confused because not only the woods across the street, but all those woods where that big development is next to the post office is going on. And that displaces so many animals that they have nowhere to go because they're building everything in Saratoga. Any piece of green.
Really, the displacement is tremendous at that point.
I mean, if I owned a piece of property, I would go out and spray paint my grass gray so that they didn't drive by and see green and come in to, because it's, I think it's terrible. I think we're overbuilding because there's no place for our wildlife to go. And that's pretty sad.
And we do need to, you know, take a stronger look at, you know, making sure we have green in a variety of different areas, even if it's just a small patch of greenery that comes in there. We should have some more smaller parks that show up rather than worrying about concentrating on larger park areas, just some small park areas that you can then have, you know, a significant stand of trees. It's not like you need a lot, but, you know, you get 10 trees, you have some shrubbery, and, you know, and life is good for a lot of wildlife that are being displaced by other means. And we really need to be looking a little bit closer at that, you know. Instead of those five houses going in, you know, three of those houses and leave some greenery.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. They don't think of that, though, you know.
No.
Well, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is years ago when you were on, you had given us an example of what you could do with a pine, your Christmas trees, when you put them out, before you put them outside. And I mean, a lot of people have gotten them outside yet, but the city or town may not have been by to pick them up. And what can you do? I know you had mentioned something to do with the needles.
Well, you can you know, take off, you know, just shred the needles off of them, you know, and use that so that you can have, you know, that can be used in many ways. It can be used as a mulch. You can collect them and save them and do them as little sachets to help keep other critters away from indoors. You know, the scent of, you know, many evergreens will help, you know, keep out certain types of insects from the home. So make little, you know, sachet pouches that you could utilize there. Other than just shredding the needles off, cut the boughs off and use the boughs to help cover areas as the snow melts, mm-hmm. to make sure you have mulching. Or just take the tree and stand it up and, you know, put some, you know, little bird feeders in there, you know, cover, you know, put out a little, you know, a little block of suet or, you know, take just a regular piece of wood and cover it with some peanut butter, and then, you know, you'll have, you know, a few seeds onto that, and then the birds will come into it, and then the tree itself works as a nice nesting area for them so that they can get away from the, you know,
elements.
Yeah.
That's great. I remember you saying make little sachets and you can put them in your dresser drawers for a nice pine scent.
Yep.
And the only thing you have to worry, because I did that. And when I went out with the shirt that I had in that drawer, birds wanted a nest on me, so I had to be careful. But no, that's a great idea.
There's an awful lot that you can do with them, you know, rather than just, you know, tossing it, you know, out there to be shred and go into, you know, the rest of recycling. There's a lot that you can do to help recycle it yourself without, you know, having
good
it taken
things.
Away.
I mean, not just, and then in the spring, I mean, they'll take them away.
Mm-hmm.
You can cut the branches up. If you haven't, they'll take it away. They'll take the tree away then.
And then it just gets shredded and added to the compost that, you know, is there. And so then it gives a nice media into the compost as well.
Sure.
You know, but you can get a lot of uses out of that one tree.
Instead of just throwing, I mean, you pay enough for the tree to begin with. So why not use it as much as you can? And you can probably use it until all the needles are gone in the springtime. Yeah. And you're not only helping yourself with what you can do with some of the boughs and the birds, like you say, it's a great place to get out of the elements for them. Because
if you have any friends who have any goats, you can always donate it to them, because goats love evergreens.
Oh, they do?
Yes. So wow. You could always donate it to your friends who have goats. Oh, so if you have any friends who have goats, you know.
That's interesting.
Because the goats will devour them. They love evergreens, and so they'll devour it, and it's actually very good for them. So
if you have a pickup truck, you can go around and pick up trees, yeah. And then
in some areas that actually is banned, and you can't do it. You need to watch, because some towns actually ban the letting.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. So
they don't want to feed the goats.
Yeah,
no. That's crazy.
I don't know, but you really do need to be careful with that one. You don't necessarily want to go and pick up everybody else's trees, but you know.
I don't know why not, but I some of the if it's a city or town workers take them and munch on them at home, I don't see why they would be against picking up a few trees and
there are some ordinances in towns that don't allow you to do it.
Well, that is blooming amazing.
So you do have to check on that.
I wonder who sat around and thought about that got
paid.
There's
a lot of little different, you know, agricultural little tweaks in different ordinances that really make you wonder sometimes.
So I wonder who,
it's kind of like that, you know, Colorado snowball fight thing that's, you know, been in the news where snowball fight was in Colorado, in a town in Colorado, snowball fighting was, you know, against the law.
You're kidding.
No. And so this young boy, you know, was like, oh, come on, we really want to do it. And he like got a whole bunch of people together and then they went and they, you know, presented to the, you know, council. And so they now have snowball fight is allowed within it. So, you know, there's a lot of little things when you start looking at different places and different laws. There's a lot of oddball laws that are out there.
So I would have brought snowballs into the council meeting and thrown them at the Well, you know, I always remember the blue laws that and there's still some of those on
absolutely.
The books.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there are.
And one of them is that you, it may have been taken off years ago, but one of them is that you can't leave your lanterns on all night long on your car. And it goes back to when cars were invented and they had lanterns on them at mm-hmm. night so you could tell they were coming down the road or whatever, and you couldn't leave those on all night long. And I remember when my father was the councilman back in the 70s, that crazy law was still on the books. But they went through and eliminated a lot of the blue laws, like you couldn't go out in a T-shirt on Sunday mornings, and you couldn't buy beer before 2 o'clock or whatever
right.
it was.
Yep. Yep.
They had a lot of blue laws.
Well, and there still are in many places. There still are a lot of those blue laws.
Yeah. Well, I know. I mean, you think of dry counties. I mean, we're getting off agriculture a little bit, but there's...
Brewery. It all ties in
dag. That's right. Hops. They grow. But there's still
malting,
dry counties.
Malting, barleys. We got it all.
That's right. We got it all. We can make our own beer here on the show and taste test it. But there's still dry counties in New York State.
Yes.
And you wouldn't think today that would be the case. One of the other things, the other items that... I think is kind of questionable to people that haven't got green thumbs, but yet want to try and you know, have plants this time of the year. When people bring in their plants from sitting on the porch all summer and before it gets real cold and they bring them in, is there anything special they should do for them to winter them over so that they can again put them outside on the porch?
It really varies tremendously with what kind of plant material you have as to the various things that you could do with that. You know, some things you would really want to bring in and just move into a very cool location in the home and just check on it, you know, every couple of weeks to make sure it's not totally, totally dry, that there is actually just a tiny bit of moisture in there. You don't necessarily, you know, depending upon how it is you're trying to bring this along, you might not want to be, you know, drying it out.
Right.
Other things you may want to dry out and, you know, just, you know, hang them in a cooler, darker area once again until you're ready to repot them. So it really depends upon the plant materials that you're bringing in as to the best way to actually winter them over. So You know, if somebody's brought their plants in and they're still growing them as a plant right now and they haven't done anything with it, the best thing for them to do is to continue just, you know, watering them and taking care of the way it is. Understandably, they may have lost almost all of their foliage by now because that, you know, acclimation process will do that. But the plant still goes into a rest. It's not the same kind of rest as if you were trying to put it into that, you know, darker, cooler area. Yeah, no, but it still will go into a rest, and then once the plant, you know, rebuilds enough within its system, it will naturally start that comeback, and you'll start to see that new growth that's going to start coming. You know, so it's not like you don't want to, you know, quit cold turkey on it now and say, oh, you know, gee, I probably should have done something differently here. You know, that decision really needed to be made when they brought it in September or October, pending upon, you know, where the plant had initially been, you know, sitting. And then this is also like the worst time to be doing anything else to the plant. You know, you don't want to be, you shouldn't be fertilizing it right now. You should not be repotting it at this moment in time. This is just like, this is the status quo moment. Give it some water and let it go.
Well, pretty much any time. I mean, I always was led to believe that, you know, when you bring your plant in from outside, it's a shock to the plant.
Absolutely.
When you repot a plant, it's a shock to the plant. So really, you can't keep doing that to a plant because, I mean, just like people, people you don't shock all the time, but if they have, you know, I mean, if you do things to them, they're going to not be able to do things normally.
That's right.
That grow,
the plant system's really shut down.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like the same as when you're cutting your grass. When you're cutting your grass, you actually stop absorption of nutrients. The roots stop picking up nutrients at that point because you cut off part of the grass top.
Right.
And so it goes into a slow regrouping. So it picks up moisture but doesn't pick up nutrients. And then, you know, then it'll start picking up nutrients. So it's, you know, it's, so if you're doing that, and that's one of the reasons, like when we say don't do anything when it's really hot outside, because you'll actually shut the plant totally down versus just lessen its ability to do things. You know, so, you know, so the same kind of thing you can look at with any of your other plants that you're bringing in. Anything you're doing to those causes that stressing mechanism into the plant. And it just depends upon, you know, how close you're doing things to the other stressor points as to what happens.
Sure.
You know, in your life, if you've got one stress going on and then something else major happens, you know, it's devastating. It's really, really hard to come back. Well, the plant is really doing the same thing, you know.
I mean, they can tolerate a lot, but they can't. Comes a point.
That's
exactly
right. So, so you don't want to be repotting, cutting, bringing it in, repotting, and cutting it back. That's like death.
right. Well, you know, I mean, any kind of shock, whether you bring it in or like in a case where you said mowing the lawn, what it has to do first is kind of repair itself.
That's exactly right.
Get it right back. And then once that happens, then you can you keep it going and let it rebuild again. One of the other problems now, well, let's go into some of the house plants that you got as a gift for Christmas or that you went out and bought, you know, to have some color in the house for the winter time. How can you keep those going? I know a lot of the plants, when they pass away or die out, that's it. I mean, they're, you can't bring them back, but ones that you can, like a poinsettia. I mean, most people think, well, I'm going to throw that poinsettia away, and, you know, I got it. They keep it a couple weeks, and it's gone. But you can keep those.
Yes, you can.
From year to year.
Yeah. Yep. You know, poinsettia, you know, like in Florida, poinsettia is growing outdoors in the environment and turning into a shrub.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then and your coloration onto them will vary because the amount of flowers vary. Because really, to bring a good poinsettia back into bloom, you really need to be playing around with its lighting. You know, so when it's being grown in an outdoor environment, you know, you're counting on Mother Nature to make these changes, and you're not necessarily always going to have the most lush, you know, show of flower at that point.
Right.
You know, we're realistically, the flower is just that teeny tiny yellow center, and, you know, the bracts that surround it is what everybody thinks of as the flower, but it's really not. It's just foliage.
Foliage.
That colors very nicely with changes in, you know, conditions that it has, you know, the amount of light, the amount of cool, all those kinds of great things. So yeah, you know, you definitely can keep those going, you know, keep watering now. You are going to get foliage dropping, but as soon as, you know, we do have that late springtime, move them outdoors. And it's best with something like a poinsettia to move it into a really partial light situation outdoors so it has some protection. It is going to flourish and grow and become this big, beautiful plant, you know, and then to really get that color back in the bracts, you are going to have to play with the lighting when you bring it back in the fall so that you really have good coloration come, you know, come the holiday season.
Sure.
So it takes a little work to get it back because Mother Nature's not doing some of the same type of changes that, you know, can happen when you're in an outdoor environment.
But, sure.
You know, we just can't leave it outside until the holiday or it'll be frozen.
And you can't, I mean, you gotta be consistent with it when you bring it inside. I know a lot of people set up a small, not a greenhouse, but a small area with blue lighting. And I mean, with I know with poinsettias, it needs more light. I think
You need dark. You need a longer period of dark
of
if you
darkness.
Can in order to really get it to actually, you know, get good color.
Okay.
You know, too much light, your color's not going to be as bright. And that's why I say, even, you know, in something like Florida, you don't always have that lush colorings that you'll get other places because you don't have as much darkness.
Like a greenhouse. But you can set it up in the cellar, only turn the light on for 6 hours a day or forever.
That's
how much.
Exactly right.
And
there's
it helps
all kinds
you with starting
you
seeds.
Do.
And yeah,
and if you don't have a basement, you know, if you have a lesser room Jew in the home, you know, you know, like pull shades in that room, put it off into that room that you're not using as often so that you have it, you know, so it's a little bit darker. It's not like it needs to be in total blackness, you know. You know, you don't need to be putting it into the closet, but if you have a really, really bright place, the closet might be where you do need to put it.
Yeah, but just be careful when you go in to check on it, because I know some spouses have closed the door and barred it. But now other plants like clematis or some of the other what do they call them, lipstick plants, you're not going to keep those over all from season to season.
Lipstick plants you can keep without any problem, you know, and those you really do need to keep growing. And that on that plant, that's one of those, you know, you have some exceptions to the rules when it comes to fertilization. So some plants would require continual fertilization even during what we would call their dormant stage. You know, it's their lesser growth stage, but they really still need to take those nutrients in. So something like a lipstick plant really does need to have nutrients as it comes through in order to really do that. Cyclamens are another one of those plants that, you know, if you give it a small amount of fertility, and remember, cyclamens' biggest problem that people have is overwatering. They just water and water and water the heck out of it. Those leaves actually hold water for a long span of time.
Really?
So you really don't want to be watering all the time. But keeping a little bit of nutrients there will help keep the plant, you know, into decent blooming stages. So, you know, realistically, the big thing, what usually happens with our houseplants is people will do one of two things. They're either going to put them right over a heat source.
Mm-hmm.
And heat them to death, or they're going to butt them right up against the window thinking they need a lot of light.
Right.
And with the kind of temperatures we've been experiencing and will experience by the end of the week, you're just going to freeze it.
Right. Now, when you water, should you water from the bottom?
It's best to water from the bottom on plants that really have foliage that will be easily diseased if it's wet. If you don't have plants of that type, you know, things like the old gloxinias, the, you know, pocketbook plants, the, you know, African violets.
Yeah.
You know, those, when the foliage gets wet, they very easily disease. Streptocarpus, mm-hmm. you know, any of those kind that have the leaves that are, you know, a hairier leaf,
yeah.
They really get diseased very quickly. And so they're best when they're watered from the bottom. You can water your plants from the top. And realistically, even those who you water from the bottom, occasionally you need to water from the top. You need to really water them and get all the salts drained out of them,
okay.
watering to the point that you're allowing everything to free flow out the bottom so that you're getting rid of excess salts.
Okay.
Because anytime you're watering from the bottom, you are going to be holding a lot more salt accumulation within the soils. And that can have a negative impact onto the roots.
Also. And when you water from the bottom, it doesn't mean turning the plant upside down. And what it means putting
no,
it in
it
a little
not.
Dish with water right. and having it come
and,
up.
And the big thing is never to leave anything in that for any length of time. When you're watering from the bottom, you're looking at a 10 to 15-minute stint.
Okay.
You know, after 15 minutes, if there's still water there,
yeah.
dump it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good to be sitting in a tray of water.
Well, no, you rot the roots out.
No.
One of the other things that somebody was talking to me about was, you know, they have plants that do well in the house, and but they get these aphids
mm-hmm.
or the
aphids
the
and
little...
fungus gnats are really big on plants during the winter time.
Yeah. Now, how can you... what can you use, I want to say generic, to keep those at bay?
Well, you know, the thing that you can do is routinely do just a, you know, either an insecticidal soap spray or make up your own spray, you know, that you could do. And, you know, routinely just, you know, give them a shot with, you know, some type of an insecticidal soap so that you can hopefully not have them build up. And that works really great for the aphids, for the fungus gnats, for mealybugs. Doesn't really do the job on scale,
okay.
you know, but it will help control all of those other ones. And then that helps keep everything at bay that you have there. So, you know, you can either make up your own solution with just water and a very common, very mild dishwashing liquid. You don't want anything that's too strong.
How would you mix that?
Because that's going to be a problem. You know.
In a spray bottle, you don't do half and half, I'm sure.
No, no.
Okay.
Yeah, no. So, you know, if we have just a small spray bottle, you're looking at like a teaspoon to a quart.
Okay.
You know, and you know, then you're just ready to go. And that can be sprayed lightly onto the plant and then and onto the surface.
Okay.
The soil surface, you know, if you know it's fungus gnats, you're really probably going to have all the little larvae in the soil and doing it more as a soil drench helps. When you're doing a soil drench, you want to make sure you're coming back once again. You're looking at that 10 to 15 minute time frame.
Right.
And then re-drenching the soil with just water.
To get that
you're
soap
really,
stuff
you're
out.
Really trying to dilute the soap so that you don't have, you know, a lot sitting there causing any long-term harm.
Sure.
Because all you were trying to do is really kill off the insects that were sitting in that soil.
Top of the leaves and bottom when you spray?
It's the underside that's much more important, especially when it comes to aphids.
Okay.
You know, and so when you're doing that, you really do. And this is the time that you, you know, if your plants are small enough, you know, my suggestion is move them into the bathroom and put them in a tub.
Okay.
You know, and then do your spraying there so that you can get really good coverage.
Okay.
You know. But leave them in that bathroom until things start to dry. Don't immediately move them back where they were.
Right.
Yeah, no. And the reason is when you're making those kinds of changes onto it, you can just the change in humidity as the plant starts to dry can really make a difference and set in other issues as well. So trying to lessen the issues you have, you know, that's the better way of doing it. Because you really need to get that underside of the leaf, you
right.
know, and that's hard to do. You can't do that if it's sitting on your really good coffee table.
Sure.
Yeah, no.
Sure, or in your window.
You know, but move them right into the bathroom and just, you know, treat them all right there. Let them then sit in the bathroom, you know, do it after the family showers are done in the morning.
Yeah.
Get everything prepped and then they're back in their place, you know, after a couple of hours because it, you know, takes an hour or to dry at least.
Sure.
And then move it back to the various locations that they're in. You're definitely going to be a whole lot better off when you're doing something along
that. And I just want to put a disclaimer in there. Don't use a towel to dry them off.
That is correct.
That's good.
No, not good.
One of the...
plants just, they actually, all plants would like not mind a shower now and then.
Really?
You have to think about plants outdoors are getting rain all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
A little shower now and then is really not a problem for most things.
Sure.
You know, as I say, those ones that have the hairier leaves, those are the ones you have to be really concerned with.
Well, one of my favorite plants, and I don't have one because my wife has so many plants that she says, well, we haven't got a place for it. Is the old Christmas cactus.
Yes.
Or even a little cactus, you know, with the red. I like the ones with the red or yellow ball on top. But if you have a Christmas cactus, weren't you saying at one point that it may not flower at Christmas?
That is correct.
And, I mean, I know there's... They call them Easter cactus, but they're probably the same thing.
There actually are three different kinds of zygotes there. And so you do have one that we would refer to as, you know, Christmas, one is Thanksgiving, and one is Easter.
Okay.
And there really is difference in the way the leaves are shaped.
Okay.
And that's how you really can tell the difference between them. So they do have some different flowering patterns that usually happen. An Easter cactus will rebloom more often than a Thanksgiving or Christmas cactus will. It's just the nature of the plant itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can get more blooms out of that than you can out of others. Now, I have a really small Thanksgiving cactus in the office, and we have a great big Christmas cactus that sits there that was one of our master gardeners. The Christmas cactus is really struggling. It kind of gets a little overwatered when you have, 25 people trying to take care of the plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So it's struggling. But my little Thanksgiving cactus bloomed at Thanksgiving time, and it's got beautiful buds on it right now.
Wow.
So it's ready to bloom again. Yeah, no.
How can you
and all
get
it does
it
is
to
it's, it just sits on top of a filing cabinet there, and it has cooler temperatures. And not always bright light. It likes indirect light and cool temperatures.
Okay.
That's really how you get cactus
Christmas
to bloom.
Right.
And don't be repotting them all the time. People constantly try to repot their plants. Some plants like a really tight root system.
Okay.
And, Christmas cactus is all the zygotes like to have a tighter root system. So don't be repotting it all the time.
Okay.
And it's just like a spider plant. Don't repot it all the time. You won't get babies if you keep repotting it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
as we said, every time you repot it, you're shocking it. So it's going to try and repair what's there. So for a Christmas cactus to bloom, you should give it more...
Cool temperatures and less light.
Yep. And do you give it more light at a certain time so that it will bloom or not really?
You don't need to.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know because I'm going to try and sneak one in the house and put it somewhere. So
they are really nice. Yeah.
The second, one of the things that, now this is my own experience, and I don't know if anybody else has gone through this. In the fall, my wife looks to repot the plants that mm-hmm. need repotting, and she doesn't like to go out to the mall area, so there's a grocery store by us, a big chain store, and it's not Hannaford. But anyway, they have a couple bags of potting soil left over, and it's a real good price. So last year we bought it, and boy, I noticed an awful lot of these little gnats in the air. I mean, my gosh, all over every time they were driving me nuts because I can't take any of that. And I'd leave a cup of coffee with some coffee in it, and I'd go into the living room to pick up paper. I'd come back, and there would be two of these things in my coffee. Well, I had enough of it, and my wife went down the cellar. We had half a bag left down the cellar, and there were these things all over the bag. So we quickly put it in a plastic bag and threw it away. So this year, the same thing happened, and I said, I'm going to go out to one of the stores out by the mall and pick up some potting soil. And she goes, no, Price Chopper has a couple bags out front. I'll get a bag. It couldn't happen 2 years in a row. Well, it happened 2 years in a row.
Well, you probably, what happens these days is that your mixes are mixed with a lot of compost. And a lot of compost brings in a lot of insects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're not things that are, you know, heated. So right. they're not a, you know, so you're definitely are always going to have some eggs around. So the more compost that's used in a potting mix, the more likely you are to have potential problems with insects. And we're getting away from utilizing a lot of other things. Peat became very difficult. You know, the peat bogs are not endless in Canada. Right. So we started adding a lot more bark and a lot more other composts to our soil mixes. And it has changed not only the composition of the mix, but it does have a tendency to have the potential of having insect problems within a mix. So buying a bag of soil does not mean it's going to be free and clear of something. But it's not necessarily sterile soil.
Right.
You know, at one time you used sterilized peat. You use vermiculite and you use perlite. Well, they're getting ready to yank vermiculite.
Why is
you
that?
Know, another carcinogen problem.
Really?
Potentially, you know. Well, because really, vermiculite is kind of like, you know, asbestos.
Oh, okay. You know, I thought it was more like styrofoam.
And no, that's what perlite is. Like,
oh, that's what perlite is.
You know.
Is.
You know, so your mixes have now changed dramatically.
Okay.
You know, and with these changes in mixes, you don't have the same type of sterile media you once had.
Okay. Because I know when I go up to the big, you know, like a Home Depot or a Lowe's, and there's other places, don't get me wrong, but you buy a bag of topsoil and it's just soil. I mean, it's not mixed with anything. And, but boy, I'll tell you, these things drive you up a blooming tree. Yeah. And
well, your potting mixes have a tendency because they're lighter. People don't want heavy plants around the home.
Right.
So you're looking for a lighter mix. So they're made with these composts. And as I say, at one time it was just those three major ingredients.
Sure.
And now it's like anything and everything
goes.
Is thrown into there. You know, and that makes a big difference as to, you know, what we have for insect life. So.
Right. And, you know, I haven't really seen a lot of peat moss. I mean, you used to see different size, you know, 4 cubic, 6 cubic. It is.
It's limited. And it is very expensive today.
It is.
It is still one of the best neutralizing type things. If you have a very high pH, the best way for you to change it, it will take you 5 years to drop the pH. But if you mix the peat moss in there, you know, it's done upon mixing. So it's still the best way to help, you know, neutralize a really high pH soil.
Right.
You know, but the expense is tremendous because it is very expensive today because we don't have as much of it available.
Well, I think we'll start having to import Irish peat moss because they got a lot of bags all over there.
No,
you never think about where the stuff comes from.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got to realize that there's not an endless supply.
Yeah.
I mean, I was using a lot of peat moss for lawns back in the 70s. And, you know, we would buy truckloads of it. And it wasn't expensive at all back then.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's one of the things that I think people have to get used to is looking at alternate sources, you know.
Yeah. And so now you have these alternate, you know, soils that are available, and they're all still potting mixes. They're lighter weight, and that's exactly what people are looking for, but you do have a greater potential of having, you know, some insect problems there, which when you're planting your things outdoors, you don't really pay a whole lot of attention to because it's not so bad.
Right.
But when you're dealing with those, you know, indoor plants, then that, you know, becomes a whole nother issue.
Sure. Getting back to, I want to go to the extension itself, the extension programs itself. Now, you said you were going through the Master Gardener program now, so obviously it's too late if anybody wants to get into the program.
Sadly,
when should
it is.
Someone sign up to...
Well, if they're thinking about it now and they're interested, they should still just, you know, call or email so that we can get them onto the mailing list.
Okay.
We really don't mail our applications out usually until August.
Okay.
You know, and it is a long process. You know, everybody, you know... to volunteer today for any type of an organization is not just, you know, walk in and, you know, say, I want to volunteer.
Right.
Doesn't matter where you're going. There's always paperwork to fill out. There's always things that that have to go through. So for a Master Gardener program, we do have an interview, we have reference checks, and we have a background check. And those are all mandated right. by Cornell University. So it is, you know, it takes time to do those things. That's why we can't, you know, bring somebody into a program that's already begun a class and say, okay, here we are, because it's going to take us at least 1 month, you know, to follow all of those that. Steps to make that happen
sure.
in order to get you into the program, you know. And so it is time consuming on everyone's part,
okay.
you know, in order to do so. But the sooner you let us know, then you're on that mailing list, and then we send that out. And, you know, and if you're still available for the following year class, then that's where we're at. So in Saratoga County and Warren and Washington, Fulton, Montgomery, we all work together and coordinate a lot together. And so we really do an annual training. But if you're in listening and you're from Schenectady or Albany or Greene County, your training is every 2 years. Okay. So it's not an annual basis. So you really do need to be checking. Like, they don't train this year. They'll be training next year is when they start their training. And their training goes for a 2-year cycle onto it. So.
Whoa.
So you're really, you know,
sure.
It can take time to get in there. Ours is an annual cycle for us, but you know, we have already begun our classes, so therefore we're not taking any new applicants.
Now the phone number is 518-885-8995.
Correct.
Or if you have a computer, you can look up Saratoga County Cooperative Extension, and you can get information there on everything. But you can also get the phone number, call, and the receptionist is very, very knowledgeable in hooking you up with the right department. We have about 7 minutes to go, and there were some other programs that you have that I wanted to know if it was still time for people to sign up for an animal training. Dog training program.
Dog obedience will be starting up. That's typically starts in May normally.
Okay.
Sometimes the end of April. In February we had a little staffing change this year within our 4-H youth development program, and so we have a new staff member coming on board on February 11th. And she will be the one who really will be in charge of, you know, that program. So, you know, that's one of the first things when she gets on board, that, you know, that information will be getting right out. You know, so Brianna will be with us, you know, starting in February. You know, so we definitely have that program that will be happening, you know, without any problem. Upcoming soon, we have our Horseman Social in February that we do every year, which is held over at Longfellow's, which is just a nice evening out for those who have an interest in horses. And we have a little silent auction and stuff that goes along with that. And so that'll definitely be coming up. We'll have our horse symposium program, which also will be, you know, in May. Diane has constant nutritional programs that are going off and on all the time with all of our nutrition programs. So realistically, a great way to see some of these programs, and we don't always get everything, I have to admit, onto our website as quickly as we want. And that's another position that we're hiring right now, too, is, you know, one of our admin positions that's in charge of, you know, doing that. Because we're in a little, you know, a little bit of a lull at the moment with that. But if you just go to ccesaratoga.org, it's, you know, you'll find events calendar that's going to be right in there. And you can see the various things that would be upcoming. We'll be getting our spring gardening series online soon. As to what's happening there. So, you know, there'll be, you know, a lot of different programming that will that's coming up.
Now, do you send out a newsletter, or is it strictly going to
We're going to be restarting our grow line letter, so our horticulture letter is going to be restarting. You know, we went on a hiatus of that for a couple of years, but we've had a lot of requests to, you know, have it back. So we're going to start that one up. But But none of our other, the 4-H program puts out a monthly newsletter for, you know, anybody who's registered in 4-H. And if you're not, but you're interested in the things that, you know, maybe some, you know, kids could participate in, you could definitely contact us and we could get you onto a listing for that. That's called the 4-H Highlights. You know, so there are some different ways of, you know, getting some additional information that's sure. out there that, you know, we would have. So.
And they could call 518-885-8995 yep. or go online and send a contact or contact someone at
CCESaratoga.org,
and that's a cooperative
Cornell Cooperative Extension Saratoga. So it's, that's why it's CCESaratoga.org.
And you can get all this information. And I mean, not only can you do that, but you can go to the website and pull up information on anything to do with agriculture. Yeah.
We have a lot of nice quick links to different things that really get you in there. If you're looking at beginner farming things, if you're looking at gardening ideas, some great links to preservation, food preservation links that you have. So there's really some, you know, some wonderful links that are there. So you're looking for some information and you don't necessarily... not sure what it is you're looking for, but you want to just explore. You know, it's great to just go to the website and start, you know, going around, clicking on some of the links and explore, you know, what's out there so that you can come up with the actual question that you, you know.
Yeah, it is a great website. I mean, you could spend a month going through it and finding information out. I mean, it really is a great program. And so... it's too late to sign up for the Master Gardener, but call up now, 518-885-8995, and get put on the list. And then, you know, if you get call in soon enough, you'll be higher up the list, I would assume. And, you know, for
well, you'll be,
next
yeah, you
year.
You'll just make sure that you get it out there and get it, you know, right. And we get everything off to you. So,
and the best.
You know, just don't, you know, I mean, the thing that I always try to stress to people is you're thinking of it now. Well, then just go ahead and give us that information now.
Sure.
We do not have our application online, and we don't anticipate going online with our application process at this point.
No, but they can get on the list.
So, yes.
Get the application. Yeah. And I would suggest that you're not a plant felon. Because when they do the background check, you know, I don't think you qualify, you know. But, Cooperative Extension has so much if you're anything to do with outside. And one quick question before we go. The governor had granted counties money for farms. Did you hear anything about that? Or has maybe
well, there's
I'm
a lot
wrong.
Of there's a lot of different grants programs that are out there right now that
okay.
are available, and it all depends upon, you know. So yes, there are grant programs that you can go into that can help you establish farms. There's grant programs that can go into that can help establish means of selling your product to other places. We have a really nice grant that we just received from the state Department of Ag and Markets for farm to school, where we're working with Pitney Meadows and Saratoga Springs School uh-huh. District in pulling together, you know, getting the, you know, more local foods within the school system.
Sure. One of the things, how's the dairy farm industry in Saratoga County?
We're still strong with the ones that we have, but we definitely, you know, we lose a few farms every year, but we're, you know, but those farms that are there are strong.
Are strong. You know, that's a terrible industry to lose, and but that's a countrywide problem, not just the Saratoga countywide problem.
Well, you know, it's a problem when you don't have family to take over. We're losing some orchards in the same fashion, where you don't have family, you know, to take over.
Yeah.
So, you know, agriculture is it's a 365-day job, and not everybody wants a 365-day
exactly.
job.
Exactly, and we always used to be proud of our farmers because it went from generation to generation. Even though they never made a lot of money out of it, it was
the quality of life was great.
The quality of life is great, and the career was one that they were happy to do. But as everything else, the world changes, and you know, an industry that was probably 1,000 years old passed down from generation to generation, you know, it's not happening, and therefore, you know, like you said, farms are getting lost, and it is a 365-day-a-year job, but you know, I mean, the farmers love it.
They
really do.
Absolutely.
And we have to be
Absolutely.
Very mindful that of what they do for us. And one thing we did find out here today as we end the show, that if you have a Christmas tree, there's a lot you can do with it after Christmas. And after that, find a goat farmer. And
that's right.
You'll make a goat happy, and maybe they'll even name the goat after you. You never know.
You never know.
That's right. Sue, thanks for being here again.
Thank you.
The hour goes by too fast.
It really does. It flies.
Yeah, but we'll be again in the next season. We'll be back on. So everybody, hopefully, I'll be able to switch it over to Polka Magic, and you can enjoy some of the polka music. And we'll see you next week. Have a good one.